Castle Rouge, Manhattan, 10:30. On your billboard for Tuesday, September 23rd, Fifth Harmony with special guest Meghan Trainor will be at the Paramount in Huntington Village, 7 p.m. Organic Vibe Trio will be at the 55 Bar, Manhattan, 7 p.m. Southbound will be at the Nutty Irishman in Farmingdale, 8:30. Looking ahead to Wednesday, September 24th, Dust Bowl Revival will be at the Bell House in Brooklyn.
Space, the final frontier. New beings, new civilizations, new places, new science. Superheroes, bigger than life, bigger than the big screen. Destinies, the voice of science fiction. Fridays, 11:30 p.m. on WUSB. Stony Brook.
And it's 6:02 p.m. here on WUSB Stony Brook time once again for Off the Wall. Thank you.
Good evening.
This is Kyle, and I'm with Emmanuel, and you're listening to Off the Wall on WUSB Stony Brook, but you probably already knew that.
No,
welcome.
I wouldn't bank on them knowing that.
Okay, well, just a reminder, friendly reminder. Here we are. It's Off the Wall. It's Tuesday. Happy autumnal equinox.
Oh, yeah. What fun. You're right. I am only in mono today because somebody took the paperclip.
Okay, no, but I made a paperclip just for this.
But look at me.
Yeah.
I'm only over
yeah.
on the left.
I know.
And not on the right. It's not
all right,
fair.
No, no. Here, let me just
people who listen to the right channel should hear me as well.
Just, okay, keep talking.
You jam your finger in there like that,
I got
yeah,
it.
It'll work, but wow. Okay. You going to keep your finger in there like that? Fine. Yeah, it's the autumnal equinox, and or it was, anyways, 23rd of September now, so I'm not sure about that. But you know what? That's boring. What's exciting? A new war. We have a new war.
Whoa. What? No, today is the autumnal equinox.
Is it really? Okay,
absolutely.
I didn't know that.
This very day.
You kept that from me.
Tuesday the 23rd.
Say a word about this until now. Okay, well, what do? How do we celebrate?
Well, we get ready for Samhain.
Say what?
Samhain.
Okay. And what in God's name is that? Who am I offending by not
knowing this? You might be familiar with Samhain as Halloween.
Oh, really?
Yes. That's the Celtic event that is associated with autumnal equinox.
And is
that's
this how
Samhain.
is this how the Celts say it? Samhain?
Yes. You would look at it and say it's Samhain, but it is Samhain.
Okay.
Samhain, actually.
Oh, because it ends in ween, W-E-E-N, like Halloween.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's an odd spelling. It doesn't look like it sounds.
You've been busy looking this up. I didn't even know about this. What? Okay. Well, way to catch me off guard.
I
don't know nothing about this.
I just wanted, you know, have something to start with, and I just looked it up a little bit. I was pretty excited myself.
We were in the drugstore last night, like around midnight or so, and they have all the best Halloween stuff out now for some reason. I think people buy it, and then it's not there anymore, and you just get, you know, a bunch of old candy corns. But what they had, before anybody realized Halloween is coming, they had something like, a 35-inch illuminated cat that you put outside.
It had amber lights, well, orange, of course, for
yeah.
Halloween, black with amber lights, and I believe it would light up. It was very large.
The most important thing was that it was 35 inches. I don't know why they felt they had to emphasize that, as opposed to the 32-inch cat that nobody wants. But the other thing, they had a poison jar, which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually, it's made out of glass, and it just says poison on it. You know, like something out of a Boris Karloff episode of Thriller. It's just, it's right there, and we quickly found a use for that.
Yeah, and they seem to be pretty well sold out of those. They're going quick.
Well, they're gone. We got the last one.
We got the last one, yeah.
But there's one bird. There's a crow. An actual, it looks like a crow. It's the exact same size. I don't know what a crow feels like. I never picked one up. But it's a bit lighter than I imagine a crow would be. But it looks just like a crow. And you can stick that anywhere and scare the bejesus out of somebody by putting a crow where a crow should not be. Like in someone's bathroom. Or, you know, even outside. If you have a crow on top of somebody's mailbox that does not move when the mailman comes, that's also a good gag.
And this is the season, and it's part of the fun of it. I've been seeing big spiders in the neighborhood, people putting up all kinds of...
Those are real spiders, Kyle.
Those
are the real thing.
That's I thought they were decorations.
What those bites on your arm are.
Okay, all right.
We're not kidding. We do get spider bites all the time.
Yeah. Well, and I will also mention that it was very, very dark last night. It was 1% of full. We were waning.
Wait a minute. You actually measure the darkness of night depending on... I mean, it makes sense. The moon's not out.
Well, there was, as they say, no moonshine last night.
Well, that depends on what your supply was like, I suppose. but, yeah, it makes sense. If the moon is not up, that it's going to be darker. But are there darker nights when the moon... I mean, there are other nights when the moon's not out. Maybe it's darker somehow because of cloud cover or because Venus isn't out there too much or I don't know.
That's certainly possible, and it was a clear night, but it was a dark night with the clarity. I made up a new word. With that...
no, that's a good word.
I think that's a Scientology word. Anyway...
Now, that's a made-up word.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to get letters now. No.
Word. So... Yeah, it's been clear, but it was nice. It was dark and 1% of full. That is interesting in that it's dark, but that just means it's going to come right back around and be waxing. We'll have full moons, and one thing will lead to another, and it'll be Halloween.
You know, Halloween really doesn't have anything to do with the moon. The moon just happens to be out there at night when people are out. Sometimes it's a crescent, sometimes it's full, sometimes it's no or new. But it's just part of the night, just like darkness, just like trees and leaves falling is as much a part of Halloween. But, you know, it's we're talking about, for some reason, the night sky, and I just wonder how many people actually take the time occasionally just to look at the night sky. It really, really is amazing sometimes, and we don't do it enough. And, you know, we just found out, we met somebody at Maker Faire this past weekend that had a T-shirt for an observatory out in Southold. I didn't know there was an observatory in Southold.
Me either.
That's out east, and we go out there to look at stars sometimes because they're really, really cool, and you can see a lot.
Yeah, and you have to get to a place where you can see 180 degrees horizon to horizon if you really want the full chance, at least, to see something, if it's whether it's a launch of something or something celestial.
You will see something. You will see shooting stars. You might see something being launched, like we've seen rockets being launched from Virginia.
Yeah, Laddie.
Yeah, or you might see satellites. You certainly will see satellites if you look for them. You'll see all kinds of constellations, stars, and planets, and occasionally the moon will come up.
Yeah, moon. Yep.
It's just an amazing experience. But we usually go out to a field or a beach or something like that. But to think there's an observatory there, wow, that makes it even better.
Yeah, it means that's a good spot and a reason suitable enough for an organization that focuses just on looking up at the stars. So our intuition, I guess, is spot on.
Well, we have to make our way out there and see that, because I've seen a lot of good stars, but I want to see them up close, you know.
Not
the stars so much, but planets.
Yeah.
And be able to make things out and just see the things you can't see with your eyes.
Yeah, I do too. I want to know. I want to know what kind of stuff they do there, and it would just be very neat to see the installation, something like that, so close to home here in the area.
It seems almost every day there is some kind of advance made with astronomy that we don't pay nearly enough attention to. Like just this past week, we achieved orbit for another spacecraft that we sent out there, and that will be checking out the atmosphere of Mars to see if life existed in the past, or we're always looking to see if life existed in the past, or if there's a possibility that some life could exist now, or perhaps what happened to Mars's atmosphere to make it so inhospitable now, and if that's something that might happen to us. All kinds of things that we can learn. Today I heard that Russia is planning on fully exploring the moon in the decade between 2020 and 2030, and that's exciting. I'm sure it'll upset the U.S. a bit. Will think they're trying to colonize or something, but it's all part of, you know, India. India is sending a spacecraft to Mars.
Yeah, they're one of the next crafts to be in Mars orbit. And that was sort of a follow up on a lot of the articles about the event that happened just the other day.
Uh-huh.
Of reaching Mars orbit. But yeah, apparently there's an Indian craft, and in fact, I think we were watching some of the news when that was launched. I think about a year ago.
Yeah, you wouldn't expect that, I guess, because you would expect a third world country to be more worried about taking care of its people. But you hear the same criticism for first world countries as well, that they should be taking care of their people instead of exploring. But it's kind of hard to quell that whole scientific feeling of curiosity.
Exactly, and I think what we can do to get behind them is look at our own history and realize how quickly we were able to do things like get to the moon. So for them to scramble and basically, I don't know, really fully realize space travel and launching things. And on what I recall from the articles and a lot of what was said at the time, a shoestring kind of a budget compared to what other programs in other countries have been over the years and even in immediate cycles. So it's impressive, and they're right up there now, a part of the country, the larger, growing, ever-growing group of people that do explore outer space.
Yeah, I don't really think anybody should be discouraged from exploring outer space or exploring near space either. Going to the moon, going to Mars, and it's ammunition for the future, because if something ever happens with that country or that region of the world where they're having some kind of problem with mass starvation or pestilence or disease, you can say, guys, you can figure this out. You went to Mars. Or you can do this. And it's sort of like they'll be guilted into doing it then.
Yeah, I can't think of any other reason why you would want to be involved. So,
But mostly it's just, you know, this spirit is there, and we are learning so much. It's just, you know, my first year at Stony Brook here, I took astronomy, and it was amazing then. And since then, the amounts of things, the textbook, if I still have it, mm-hmm. is probably so outdated that it reads like something from the 17th century. We've learned so much about different planets. Oh, well, back then, we didn't know about planets outside the solar system. Now there are thousands of them. Of course there are thousands of them. We all sort of knew that was very, very likely.
There's thousands of solar systems.
Thousands. It just keeps going on. And obviously, and you know, I didn't mean to get so metaphysical or philosophical, but...
What's a good place to start?
I guess. We have to figure out how to reach those places. It's impossible for us to reach those places because you have to travel faster than the speed of light to get there in any decent amount of time. Otherwise, you're talking about hundreds and thousands of generations before your journey is over, which really doesn't make any sense. So are those stars, is that universe out there in the sky just to mock us and to say, this is something you can never get to? You know, you're stuck down on the planet you're looking at the universe from. No, there's got to be some kind of an answer. We just haven't figured it out yet. And maybe when we figure out other things, such as extending our lifespan, we'll somehow figure this out at the same time. Maybe they're connected somehow, where we can bend space and time and figure out ways to achieve these things. Because they're obviously there. They're there for some kind of a reason. They're there to interact in one way or another. Every puzzle, every mystery has been that way. Used to be crossing the ocean was considered impossible. So, yeah, at some point, this will happen. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. We have other things we have to figure out, but it's going to happen.
Well, I sure hope it isn't mocking us. If it is, I do know one thing. We certainly can get to those places faster. If not technically, in our imaginations and with our creative mind, we can go there and imagine what is out there and maybe create devices that can do that for us. And that is exactly what I think we're witnessing with all these probes and missions. They're even starting to talk about that manned mission.
We have to think outside the box.
Yeah.
If we just think in conventional terms of travel, we won't get there that way. You have to think of a different way. Whether it's some kind of computing power that allows you to be in several places at the same time, Hitchhiker's Guide, they had a theory about this where they said nothing travels faster than bad news, and so they actually were able to fuel ships on bad news, and the problem was nobody was ever happy to see them when they got there, but they got there very fast. We have to think along those lines.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a really excellent segue, because we're going to be able to power many starships with the kind of news we have for everyone today.
Yes, it's about my phone. that's what you meant, right?
Yeah. No, okay. I'm as concerned as you are, and I think the listeners are too.
Well, I mean, just before showtime, my phone decided that it was time to tell me that it had an update that it wanted me to install.
Right.
And that was a couple hours ago, and it's been spending most of the time installing it. And when it was done, I realized that it changed my I didn't really care about the background so much, but it decided to change it, decided to move the time to a different part of the screen. It took my battery icon, it changed it from green to white. And I looked this up, and there's a lot of people who have been complaining about this since spring, which apparently that's when they first started rolling out this update, and you can't change back because they just decided white is going to be the way they do it from now on. And they've moved everything around, you know. I had to find my settings, and they're somewhere else. So I'm trying to turn the sound off on my phone, actually. So I'm going to do that. There's a new feature called Do Not Disturb. I'm going to hit that because I don't want to be disturbed, just in general. All these settings and things, that you ever have that happen in a program or an operating system where it's just changed and you didn't ask for that change and it was better the way it was before? You know, sometimes there are improvements, but lots of times they take away things that you needed. And a word processor and a communications program, desktop publishing, you name it.
Oh, it spans all of it. Mm-hmm. It's so true. It's a very common thing. To me, it just is a constant reminder of the messiness and the chaos involved in developing. And it's so clean when you look in business management or you look in some template of like a product development life cycle and these kinds of things. But the actuality, when consumers actually have the devices and you're in a market environment, it's a mess. The support isn't there. Something changes with the company. The company, you know, changes teams around. They have different people on it. They have different emphasis. Maybe they want to go with a different division with different products to please their board of directors. It really is a messy process. And you really hearken to those companies that are, I guess, the stable, the kind of long time companies, those ones that are kind of old and slow. You yearn for them when you realize a lot of this new stuff, it's changing so quickly. They have no sense of their own history, so they're not really supporting anything they've done in the past. They just want you to be doing, you know, download what, you know, what their basic best version is today. It's kind of like the way Google does the GFS file system, where they their whole infrastructure is like snapshotted and updated constantly. So many different things could just all of a sudden be updated, and everybody's on that same version. And here you are just trying to catch up, because it's not your everyday occupation to sit around and care what version your phone's running.
There are people who get a great thrill out doing just that. Yeah, we get to spend a lot of time with them, and you know, it's fine if you're into that kind of a thing. I'm more into experimenting, using things, breaking things occasionally to figure out what they do. I don't like having to adapt because this is what has been deemed what the majority of people want. Even though most of the time it's not what they want, it's just what the developers say this is better. And lots of times their sense of design, their sense of ease is totally out of whack with what people are actually desiring.
I'm sure there's absolutely like just books and books and books full of case studies of like the way this has worked in institutions. They have probably entire disciplines devoted to this, to streamlining this kind of stuff in science and engineering companies. But it's so true, and we're hit with it constantly as a consumer. And left with what? Minimal customer support, lousy everything, and maybe a couple forum posts for some stuff that is dubious at best and perhaps breaks it at worst, mm-hmm. beyond repair. I mean, that's what you're left with, and it really is sad. And it is what has, I think, pushed a lot of people to making their own stuff and repairing a lot of the stuff they have and modifying their own stuff and demanding that companies provide evaluation and schematic and verbose service manuals and other things that actually empower the person to truly own that item, if it is a material item.
Exactly. Truly owning something, whether it be hardware, whether it be software, whether it be just the method with which you use either of those things. And that's being taken away from us constantly. If you buy software, well, you're not allowed to use it unless you use it under certain circumstances. If you buy a movie, well, you can only view that in certain areas or for a certain amount of time, and only under only in the version that they deem is appropriate for you. It's the whole thing is designed to take any kind of control out of the consumer's hands. So if you buy something, you pay $1,000 for a piece of software, you're not actually buying that software, you're buying a license to use it, and that license can change. And God forbid you want to use it on a different machine, or your other machine crashes, or something expires on that makes it impossible to use it there, you have to buy it a second time. That's at least the way they think. Of course, most of us won't do that, we'll figure something else out, but it's incredible to me, just that corporate mentality that extends to virtually every aspect of life these days.
Yeah, I would say, like, they go to the extent to even combat the things that you might do to get around it. So say you're changing the date on your computer's BIOS or something to get around a 30-day period or something. They actually want to go after that money. They don't want to create another product. They don't want to do something. They'll actually come back and be looking for money by basically locking you out of modifying a demo or anything like that. And it stifles people that want to use stuff that maybe for whatever reason can't and don't have that opportunity because you're spending so much engineering and of your power as an entity locking something down than actually making it a good product, and that I think plagues that scenario a lot too.
Can I talk a little bit about the TV project which we're working on?
I don't know. Can you?
Well, I'm going to try. But this is something that we've been involved with for a while. We have literally thousands of hours of television broadcast, commercial, non-commercial, you name it,
mm-hmm.
That I recorded from the 80s well into the 21st century. We want to digitize it. We want to have it all digitized and shareable and archivable, ways that we can identify things, everything from commercials to programs. For instance, just to give you a good example, there's this terrific program called WKRP in Cincinnati. It's about a radio station, very much like this one, except it's a commercial station.
Mm-hmm.
And they've released it since on DVD, but because of all the copyright issues and control that they have on that level, they had to take all the music out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a radio station that played music. Music was a key part of that program. But they erased it, and they replaced it with elevator-type music, which makes no sense whatsoever, and ruins the show.
And everything's completely unrecognizable. It's like it's totally sanitized and plastic.
They even had to reread lines when music was playing in the background, with different actors sometimes, so that it's artificial.
Again, putting a lot of money, investing in protecting one version and locking people out of the intellectual, the art, that was the original
mm-hmm.
version, instead of creating new stuff that people will pay for anew.
And I think you hit it there, because it's art. It was made already. And just because it's being transferred to a different medium, i.e. DVD instead of VHS, does not mean that you got to get permission all over again to use the music that you used the first time you got permission to use the music. You know, imagine if Van Gogh, you know, could only use green on his painting, and as soon as somebody took a picture of Mona Lisa there or whatever, he had to get permission all over again, or someone had to get permission. It's a ridiculous series of illogical statements that get you to this stage.
These artists need to go out and make some more music,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, imagine you are on you know, Bill Nye or something, and you try to collect residuals for every time Bill Nye talks about climate change just because you were on his show as a snotty kid.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying, though?
Yes.
I mean, make some new stuff.
Do you want me to follow up on that?
No,
I will. Okay.
No. All right. But, I mean, make some new stuff. I mean, people change. You have to go out and make some new stuff. Don't rest on your laurels and try to just continuously collect on old stuff, especially if it's been assembled in other artworks and then, as you've said, reassembled into a new medium. It should be preserved because it completely ruins the original intent behind it. And as an artist, I get really offended by that.
Yes. By the way, I know Van Gogh did not paint Mona Lisa. All right. It was Leonardo DiCaprio. I know that.
Yes.
So, by the way,
I didn't even catch that. Oh my
gosh!
He spoke
in front of the UN today on climate control, but we're going to completely ignore that.
Yes.
Because we're talking about other more important things. So WKRP is a great show that had all this music that is ruined now in the DVD release. But because I was smart and I recorded it when it was being repeated on Channel 5 at 11 o'clock at night every weeknight.
Yes.
I have VHS copies of all the episodes. Although I should point out that they were syndicated, so because of syndication, they edit out maybe 30 seconds to a minute back then. They probably edit out more now because they have to sell more commercials. Corporate world again, ruining things. My view is that if something is created, it should be created and preserved the way it was created, not ever changed. That should be, you know, very basic logic right there. So anyway, we have these copies, but they're on VHS tapes. It's deteriorating. We need to import all of that onto a digital medium. And we have a program that works on. However, because of one reason or another, that program will only work on Windows XP. And we're having trouble getting copies of Windows XP. Even though we've already paid for copies of Windows XP, the licensing key, it's very complicated and ridiculous, and it's made even more so by the fact that Windows XP is outdated.
Yeah,
so good luck going back in time to get that, to make that program work so that you can import the VHS tapes and digitize them so that people can share what was over free television in the 1980s and 1990s. That's the kind of challenge that we face.
Right. And there was not, it's not as though you were living in a vacuum in the interim between having recorded and then actually getting the chance to go through an archive and come up with a process to preserve this stuff.
No, I was, for the most part, but that's a different reason. But
yeah, but it's incredibly time-consuming, and then these little mishaps insofar as products life cycle and software and the obsolescence of things, that it becomes a hang-up when you come back to it and you say, okay, now I can work on, oh, well, now I got to look at this. It's
right.
Basically sabotage. In retrospect, and I would, in any event, yeah, it's basically we bought so many copies. I think you've got copies of Windows 95. We've probably got 5.5 different copies of Microsoft's OS spanning SP1B Service Pack 3A all the way to 2 whatever. I mean, we've got many different versions.
We've got Windows 9.
And if we go around and look at all the devices, I'm sure we could find enough serial keys on old equipment that still had either OEM or this or that or the other thing. The point is, we've more than paid for XP. We've paid Microsoft. You hear that, Microsoft? You're paid.
Considering we're not even devout Microsoft users, that's quite a statement right there. We do this for convenience. yeah, I don't know, it sounds like it's the most inconvenient thing in the world, but to get these bits of software to work properly, you have to run the proper OS.
In fairness, Microsoft's got some pretty good, they're usually pretty far ahead on particular video codecs and technologies and new stuff, and at the time that was pretty much state-of-the-art to get composite video digitized in real time. No matter what the OS, it ought not to be this way, right? Mm-hmm. And it is across OSs, I think, inherently difficult to have continuity over time when you're dealing with something that's either been archived or you're anticipating archiving it, and the process to actually do that. And I will mention, just if anyone knows where to get some nice Sony broadcast quality SVHS players, we would love a nice rack mountable, something that's serviceable, a Sony deck that you can repair. And I know they had VHS broadcast decks. They're just not very common. They're not that expensive either. Mostly they were beta or they're HD cam or a whatnot now, and those are generally very expensive in the broadcast realm, but in stations they often would need a capacity to play VHS over air or in their system, so they are out there. It's just hard to find, and it's getting harder to find VHS players in general because, well, people don't use VHS.
No, they don't even know what VHS is, and that's a shame because there are so many things that are available only in that realm, and we need to at least make sure that they're preserved in some other format if we're going to move to something else. And that is what happens so often when we quote-unquote make progress in the future. And this is what I constantly am decrying, is that we don't think about what we're migrating. We forget about so much of it. We even had this happen to us this past week, where we had all these recordings that we actually found them later
on. Oh, gosh, yeah.
The recordings of the phone system that Evan Doorbell made, and these are really amazing. They're well worth looking up on the internet. Just look up Evan Doorbell, spelled the way it sounds, and you'll hear all these sounds of the 60s and 70s and the way phones used to sound. We had all of this. We downloaded all the real audio, yeah, real media files.
It was in a real media. It was a totally obscure format then.
And they changed. Nobody uses that anymore, even though they still exist. Nobody uses that. And somehow all of our copies got erased. Something we wanted to preserve, and we must have thought that we copied it someplace else, but all gone. Fortunately, we found the website that had them all, had to download them all over again, but if we weren't able to do that, we would have erased something that we were trying to save. So imagine, if you're not trying to save it, how easy it is to get rid of history. Ask the BBC. They've erased so much of their history. Almost every single broadcasting outlet out there has done that. There are all kinds of tapes in warehouses in New Jersey just waiting to be burned down because nobody has taken the time to preserve them or paid the ransom fees by various companies to get the rights to do that. And we all lose by having that happen.
Yeah, and it's I completely agree with that. The other part, it's the amount of legal teams and crap that the people that end up actually do archiving are sitting on it under lock and key with hordes, gaggles of attorneys that just want to eat lunch on it for decades. And the other thing I was going to mention was in archiving the a lot of this stuff, when you switch, I lost my train of thought.
Well, if I can get on another train, let me just say that when formats change, whether they're audio formats, file formats, OS formats, something is lost in the transition. And if you look back in time, you look back on ancient writings, you know, from back in the 1950s, or even perhaps ancient Greece, things like that, it's all written down. And if you had used real media back then, or any format, Windows or Google or anything, I guarantee it would not be around today. Because somebody somewhere would have upgraded, would have changed, and would have lost something without even realizing what they were doing, wouldn't have survived. And this is the test I always use. And I remember reading an article by Katie Hefner in the New York Times about this years ago, how digital photographs don't last. All right, they do not last. They become incompatible with new software, or they get erased, or they get put someplace and lost track of. Photo albums, they're around. You know, you might only have one copy of them, but you know where it is, and you can make copies in other ways. But if you have something on an old digital camera, find your first photograph on your first digital camera. Guaranteed you can't do it.
I can.
All right, you're different. But
what I was going to say is we went through the trouble to actually download the real media versions of phone trips, and then we went through the trouble to actually convert those to MP3s before phone trips themselves had converted the entire archive to
MP3s.
And
we still deleted them somehow.
And we still deleted them, and then in that interim where we didn't even realize we had lost a whole bunch of them because they were on a media player when we were using them, and then I guess we had not backed them up, when we went out to look, imagine a world where phone trips themselves hadn't actually worked on their stuff and created all the MP3s. Imagine they were just gone. Well, we may have been the only people that had done it and stupidly erased the real media files. Now, of course, there are places like Archive and other things, but that's the gist of it. So thank God they were actually working on getting their stuff into MP3, and I'm glad they're there, and we really appreciate their work.
It's interesting. You know, we weren't planning on talking about any of this, but today, it just so happens that we released Volume 4 of 2600 in the form of the Hacker Digest, where we basically take an entire year and make one publication out of it. And we put that in PDF form and put that on the Internet today. And we published for everybody to see all the changes, all the interesting things that took place in that time period, the covers, the technology we were talking about, the various stories involving us personally. And it's amazing that so much of that is new today. So much of that is not known because it's not preserved. And you think of these things, they're going to last forever. You think that, you know, you're part of something, you're telling a story, it's always going to be there. It's not true. There are top 10 record albums from the 1960s and 70s that are out of print that cannot be found. Things disappear. Films disappear, you know, if someone doesn't keep copies of them, if it's not spread around. So it's vital. It's vital that we have means of doing this, of preserving our history, sharing it, spreading it around, making many, many copies in many formats, and just not letting it fade into obscurity.
And that's it. It's the ways and actually coming up with, we're really good at coming up with new technologies. We're really good at using these technologies to come up with new media, but we're not really good at coming up with new technologies that preserve all the media we've created.
Yes.
So that it's it's still there.
How about, I think, as part of our overall constitution for the way things should run, copyright and preserving technology, in addition to if something comes out, it's out, it stays out regardless of the format. You don't have to get new permissions and keep it in a vault someplace. But in addition to that, how about the people who develop the technology are different from the people who preserve the history, so that you don't have people who don't see the importance making formats that won't support easily transferring from the old format to the new format, and you have people who are simply interested in preserving history, you know, and that is what they do, and they're not worried about what the next version of a particular OS is going to do or not do. Their main concern is just keeping history alive.
And that there are a lot of technologies out there that could be cobbled together, that could be employed.
Mm-hmm.
I remember years and years ago, ROMs were sort of just coming out, or we were able to bring back some of the older video games because you could run an emulator on a PC and play some of the older games just by getting a ROM file for it. Stuff like that. I mean, virtualization technology is great. You could emulate an old system that does understand a format, but people need to care enough to set up a massive system that has maybe every generation of a particular platform, and it's set up in a safe, like really, really good logical way. But that takes a certain amount of prowess and thought, and that's really what we're not good at,
well,
I think.
Well, you say people need to care. I think people need to know they care. And people, if they're not aware of what it is that they should care about, obviously by default they're not going to care. When they become aware of, wow, this is an old camera. This is how this camera works. Here's an old telephone. Open it up. Look at it the inside and see how it functions. We did this weekend with a whole bunch of kids at Maker Faire. They're all fascinated by this old phone from 1937 that still works. That you know, and you can look at it and see how the mechanics work. Take it apart, put it back together again. Things, so, you can't do that with an iPhone. You can't take that apart and say, "Oh, I see what's happening here." No, in fact, if you do that, you lose all rights to get anything fixed. So at least have an understanding of the backbone of technology, which still exists today, and ask questions, experiment, take things apart. That's what it's really all about.
Right, and then when you ask yourself, okay, so, well, where is that backbone? Where is all that technology? I want to know about it because I want it to instruct the future. Well, that's all the stuff you got to preserve. That's
mm-hmm.
the stuff you got to look through because that's the storytelling, and that is encapsulated the progression of it to what it is today. So you have to be able to get to that stuff to have it instruct about the past so you can compare it to what you're living in and what you're experiencing now.
As far as preserving the actual interest, I don't think we have to worry about that.
Sure.
Because we were talking to kids as young as 5 who got it, who were into it, who were curious and wanted to take things apart and experiment and build. That's never going to go away. That's humanity right there. What can go away, though, are the actual examples of technology, of music, of film, everything.
Yeah, as you would say in academia, the media texts themselves, the artifacts, perhaps, in anthropology. But those things need to find a good home, and that's why there's so many good museums and good archives and the societies and groups and people working on it. But
it's just it's natural interest. Like when you're going around Europe and you've got your old camera. What kind of camera is that again? The really old
Rolleiflex.
Yeah, the kids gather around because they're interested in this. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, the 16 megapixel newest camera on the market. No, it's something old. It's something that links them to the past. It's something that is true photography.
Right, just dangling around clocking them in the head. No, it's an old camera, you know, and it's got a story, and it's intuitive that it is an instrument, it's so cool to share that too. I had a kid come up to me at this fair, Maker Faire in Queens, and he was just like so lit up, was going on and on mm-hmm. about all the things he collects.
He collects, he sold his BMX bike to buy an old Schwinn cruiser bike, and he was just telling me all the different things he's into. He had this very old Nikon, like a Nikon model I'd never seen in my life. I mean, really, like, I think it's just a Nikon F is what it was, and not F4, and I mean, I don't know what version it was. It was crazy. It had some, like, metering and a really oversized pentaprism. I don't know what he had, but I was so blown away because he loved it, and he appreciated the old gear and the old, the character it had, the way it was built, the heavy, the weight of it all.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, it's really inspiring to see, and you got to know that there are people out there that appreciate it too, but we've got to, we got to share that appreciation.
Well, you have to wonder, how do kids get into things that old, and same thing with music. How do kids get into music from the past instead of just stuff from the present? You don't have to reject the stuff in the present, but you have to realize there's more than just that. It's all linked together. And if you just focus on one thing, you're robbing yourself of a true education. And that's something that that I hate to see. You know, it's you get stronger, you get further by taking it all in and seeing how it relates and making something better as a result.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, did you want this other cookie? Because I know you
see. No. I've got my hands full here. I'm running the console here.
Yeah,
you're
not supposed to have cookies in here, but I just couldn't resist. We're down the hall, and
the
shortbread cookies on the air, I know, make my voice kind of. But it only happens once a week.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You know, we were supposed to mention the war. In fact, the whole program was supposed to be about the war. But what time is it now? We only have about 3 minutes left.
Well, I think that qualifies. You mentioned it.
Okay.
Is there anything else going
on? Just in brief. Yeah, we started bombing another country yesterday. You know, is someone keeping a tally of the countries we bombed? Because I don't think we ever bombed Syria before. I think this is a new one. But just to give you a sense of how complicated and crazy it all is, just look at Syria, all right? Let's just look at Syria quickly. All right, we have the situation now where the United States and a bunch of Arab countries, I think five or six, which, by the way, that is the best possible thing Obama could have done, is get a coalition of countries from the region to be involved in this rather than countries outside the region. That is exactly what is needed. Now, what would be nice if we kind of step back and let them do the rest of the job, but they're somewhat reluctant.
It's refreshing.
It's a little refreshing to see Arab countries bombing other Arab countries. I agree.
It's almost thoughtful.
But just to give you a sense of how insanely crazy it is, right now the United States is involved in bombing ISIS targets, or IS targets, in Syria. Now, ISIS, they are involved in toppling the Syrian regime, which we also would like to topple in addition, but not with those guys. We want to topple them with somebody else. So right now, the Syrian government and the United States government are enemies, but they're bombing the same people. All right, just to keep it a little bit complicated there.
Right.
So in addition to that, you have the internal revolution in Syria, where you have moderate rebels and not so moderate rebels trying to topple the Syrian government. You have the moderate rebels fighting the ISIS rebels. You've got that going on. Then you've got the Kurds, who are basically a displaced people that span four different countries: Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Turkey. They are crossing over the border from Turkey. Actually, they're crossing over the border into Turkey to escape the fighting. And then some of them are trying to go back to help fight ISIS. But Turkey, one of our allies, isn't letting them because they're afraid that if they win, they're going to unite with the rest of the Kurds in those other countries and come back and attack Turkey. So, and yesterday, to make things even more fun, Israel shot down a Syrian plane that is sent straight into the Golan Heights. Which, I mean, how many different, this is Game of Thrones stuff, it really is. You need a chart to keep track of it all. And there's more I'm not even getting into. There's all kinds of internal fighting and bickering, I'm sure, inside every single camp.
Right.
You have to wonder, Syria's got a lot on its plate. Is it really the time to go and intrude into Israeli airspace? That seemed a little illogical to me. Yeah, it's a mess. It's a big mess, but it's fun to watch on television, I guess, late at night, and see how it's just, you wonder where it's going to go. You wonder where it's going to go next. We have the whole climate change thing going on in Manhattan right now. You know, UN climate change. There was a march on Sunday. 100,000 people or more.
Ban Ki-moon marched.
Yes. And he didn't change his clothes.
And he didn't get gassed.
Yeah, but that was not covered in the media at all. You know what was covered? You know what crowd of people was covered in the media? The crowd of people waiting to get the iPhone 6. That's what.
Way crowded.
Yes.
All right, well, that is it for Off the Wall. We got to get out of here.
A few things to think about, that's all. That's
just
all.
A couple things. Yeah. We'll be back next week for more exciting things from the world. Stay tuned. Stay aware. Thanks for listening. Good night.
Because you want to buy a coat or a house. They own everything. 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 They own everything, brother. Black brother, pink brother, yellow brother, white brother. They own everything. They own everything. They own everything. They own everything. In Russia, in America, in France, in South Africa, they own everything. They own everything. They own the property. They own the TV stations. They own the radio stations. They own the musicians. They own the artists. They own everything. (Laughs)